Well, welcome to Week, the political roundtable from the Commonwealth Club of California. From Monday, November 7th, 2016, you thought it would never arrive. It did. This week, we finally get to Election Day, tomorrow. It's a big day for both parties. Trump fans will be thrilled, of course, if he wins. It'll be a miraculous insurgency candidacy. But even if Trump wins, I think there's good news for Democrats, and that is, as of this afternoon, one-way tickets to Vancouver, Canada are 111 on Delta, 167 on United. It's only 216 on Air Canada, so everybody wins. Well, thank you for joining us here today in San Francisco. I'm John Zipperer, your host for Week to Week and the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial. On today's program, we are, of course, going to talk about the final gasp of this incredibly long election season, nationally, locally, and statewide. We also talk about some of the coming changes to the GOP after the election, no matter what happens, how to make money at BART, and of course other political news, and we'll wrap it all up with our live news quiz. So I always like to note that the Commonwealth Club has people, members, supporters, and panelists all of a wide variety of views, so any opinions that are expressed up here are those purely of the speakers and not of the Commonwealth Club. So let's meet our panelists for today. I'm going to start on the far end of the stage with C.W. Nevius. He's a columnist for a few more weeks for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Thank you.
You can follow him now and probably even afterward on Twitter at C.W. Nevius. Next to him is Daniel Bornstein, a columnist and editorial writer for the East Bay Times, the Mercury News. He's on Twitter at BornsteinDan. And completing our trifecta of columnists today, we have Deborah J. Saunders. She's a columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle, where she's also the token conservative blogger on sfgate.com. And you can follow her on Twitter at Deborah J. Saunders. So. There are question cards spread throughout the room, and write out and submit any questions you have. We'll have people pick them up and deliver them to me, and I will try to ask as many of them during the program as I can. Let's go right to the roundtable, and first, of course, let's talk about the presidential race. If Vladimir Putin, Russia's president, really wants to destroy democracy in the United States, I think all he has to do is hold a referendum on Wednesday saying, do you never want to hold another presidential election? Now, the results might please him at that point. We're on the eve of Election Day. Tomorrow night, we should know, hopefully, who has won the presidency, Republican Donald J. Trump or Democrat Hillary Clinton. So my initial question for all of you, but maybe just start with Dan to have someone to start this with, what are you expecting tomorrow night? What results are going? Do you think are going to come in, certainly at the presidential level and maybe some of the other
Well, I think that I'm hoping that we may know before we go to bed. I'd rather not go through 2000 all over again. But I think that we'll probably know before we go to bed, those of us who stay up a little bit later. But the real question, I think, is what happens afterwards? Because I think, assuming it comes out as all the polling data seems to suggest it will, how do you govern after that? What happens? This does not end with Tuesday. With tomorrow, this is the most divisive presidential race I can remember in my lifetime, and you just don't take that genie and stuff it back in the box, and on Wednesday everything's fine and it's over. I just don't think that's. I think that this is the repercussions of this will last for years.
Okay.
Well, the only thing I'd say is how can it be any different than what we've seen already? I mean, it was absolutely polarized. The government seemed to be absolutely stopped in place. The Republicans have promised to stop every possible if Hillary Clinton wins, but they were doing that with Obama. It doesn't seem that much different. Two things. One is, back in the 50s, there was a famous story where Time magazine sent a telegram, this is how old it was. He sent a telegram to this famous astronomer, and he said, is there life on Mars? Send 10,000 words. And he sent, nobody knows, 5,000 times. which is kind of this election. Now, the popular theory that's going on now is that the Latino, the Hispanic vote has suddenly risen to the fore. We're actually going to see this for the first time. And you remember that when Romney lost, the Republicans got together and said, we've got to mobilize this Latino base. We've got to get the Latinos involved. Then Donald Trump came out and said that they're all rapists and murderers and so forth. And now we're seeing unprecedented levels of Latino voting. So mission accomplished. And I think the key will be Florida and also a place like Nevada where they really have gotten out the vote with Latino voters. Yeah. So I would say that.
Deborah?
So this has been a really ugly election. And I think the worst part is so many voters hate both candidates. So many voters are unhappy with both of their choices. I've never seen anything like it. And if you had asked me what's going to happen when Donald Trump first won the nomination, I would have said, well, Hillary's going to win. And at any rate, it looks like that may well happen. We'll take Nate Silver for argument's sake. It's basically 2-1. She wins. If Trump wins, there are going to be a lot of surprised people and a lot of angry people. And if Hillary wins, well, you know, as again, sort of what we expected. But what I've found so amazing
about this
race,
there'll be a lot of angry people.
There'll be a lot of angry people either way. But what's been really
including Donald Trump.
Pardon me? Including Donald Trump. I think he'll have an aneurysm. But really, if you watch this, the thing that's been so amazing about this race is how every time Hillary got a wide lead, it narrowed. Because people, I think this is like a ping pong election for the undecided voters. They think, oh, Hillary's going to win. Ew. Oh, Trump's going to win. Oh, my God. And it would just sort of go back and forth, and we're going to be stuck with somebody who wins, and probably Hillary, but maybe Trump. And it's just not going to be something that people feel good about. I think both parties have failed their constituents. And, you know, the voter, I mean, look at Republican voters nominated Donald Trump. Democratic voters picked Hillary Clinton in a rigged primary. This is just going to be something where, yeah, taking a shower isn't going to wash off the experience.
This is where I really enjoyed being on the panel with Deborah tonight, because now I get to be a real liberal here.
You are a real liberal, really. You just think so, you're not.
So, you know, yes, there are some real problems with Hillary Clinton and the way she's run this campaign and the way and some of her managerial and governing styles and the way she approaches the job in certain ways. But this false equivalency, I'm really troubled by still. This, you know, that somehow her faults are on par with what we saw out of Donald Trump during this whole thing. I get it that the way she handled the emails wasn't great. You know, she clearly, you know, and some of the, you know, WikiLeaks stuff, probably if any other campaign that had come out, you would have seen the same thing. But I was so offended at such a deep level by what I heard out of the Trump campaign, at a level that this is a false equivalency that I find really disturbing. I mean, Donald Trump is a disturbed man who and a bigot at the core. And I find this, you know, I find this I find the isolationist mentality and the bigotry so disturbing.
They may both be ooze, but Donald Trump is a bigger ooze.
I mean, yeah,
this kind of reminds me, I mean, for the media, it kind of reminds me, remember the Superman movies when the bad guy would have a gun and he would like fire at Superman, and he'd finally take the gun and just throw it at him? I mean, Donald Trump has had all these things. I was just thinking the other day about Roger Ailes. Okay, Roger Ailes had accusations of sexual misconduct. He was abusive. These women came forward. They told their story. He was removed. The same thing happened with Donald Trump, and he just said it's all lies. It doesn't stick to him.
Who else said that?
I don't think we have a tape of Bill Clinton. You know, I'm sorry, but I'm with
saying.
Daniel. This is not a false. This is a false equivalency.
Okay.
But I think that's the deal, and it has been frustrating as a member of the media that this is how it works. We find something that he says, we go back, we check it, we say that's wrong, that didn't really happen. This is going to make a big difference. It's made no difference. Go ahead.
His sexist personality. The voters can see it and react to it. And either voters are going to not put up with it and not vote for him, or they're going to make excuses for it and vote for him anyhow if they're determined to. But they understand that. What to me is a deeper and more disturbing is, you know, because I think people can understand the sexism, and either they understand, you know, they know where they come down on it. It's the rest of it, the raw bigotry that is harder for people to understand because it plays on some isolationist fear, you know, on this isolationist mentality and this fear of other cultures, and that I find so disturbing. You know, maybe it's because of my heritage and who, you know, my father was as an immigrant, and my, you know, some of his my family that never made it through the war. You know, I mean, this is, you know, that I find this just. We've so lowered the debate and the discussion in this campaign.
That does make this next question a little awkward then, but it'll be good exercise for the three of you. Someone writes, almost everyone in San Francisco dislikes Trump, but what can you say about his positive qualities responsible for his political success this year? Deborah, go.
Yeah, I'll take it. So, by the way, I mean, I voted for Gary Johnson. And as far as I'm concerned, tomorrow I win because either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump loses, and they both deserve it. You know, so I ask people all the time who they're voting for, and the best answer I got was from somebody who's a Republican who's voting for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And what he said to me was this: he said, "I'm looking at the business situation. I believe that he will be good in terms of taxes and regulation. I'm watching the Black Lives Matter protests and how the Department of Justice is handling this. And I think that he will be more pro-police than anyone else. I look at Obamacare, and this is the last chance that there will be to have a good reform of it, and that's something he wants. And, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court. I couldn't believe that the Republican Party nominated Donald Trump. I don't consider him to have the character for the job. I don't think he's a Republican. I mean, let me just say that. I mean, he gave money to the Clintons. He's given money to Jerry Brown. He's given money to Kamala Harris. He's been registered as a Democrat and as a Republican and with other parties. He obviously decided that this is the party that would accept him, and he made decisions on this race that I don't like. So,
and mind you, this is her answer for pointing out his good side.
But he won the nomination, and there are a lot of people who, you know, you see these Republicans and they go out and everyone says, and you have to denounce this and you have to denounce that. Well, he won, and he.
Do you think it's his party now? Or do you think he's gone?
And look at all the people who are probably going to get hurt. I know, you, like Daryl Issa, Republican congressman from Southern California.
Poor Daryl Issa. Oh.
You guys are so tolerant.
Sorry, I just love this town.
I
didn't say it. But for no,
of course not. But, you know, I mean, there are a lot of Paul Ryan. Will he last? We're not sure. Yeah. Kelly Ayotte, and by the way, I mean, I know that folks here like to think that they really want to have a strong two-party system and they want to see good Republicans do well. It's people like Kelly Ayotte, senator from New Hampshire, just a smart, good senator, and she's probably not going to make it because of Donald Trump.
Is she pulling behind?
It looks like Hassan's going to get it. I mean, that's well, and she as had, crystal ball says.
And what? She kind of had a hard time with balancing that, you know, and a big part of your constituency is pro-Trump.
That's right.
It's hard to
And look what's happened in Nevada with Joe Heck. I mean, he was somebody who, because he pulled away from him, it's going to hurt him. So, I mean, he's put this rift in the party that is just ugly. Okay. So,
well, but part of this, the reason that there are these rifts is because he wasn't discussing policy. He wasn't conducting a campaign with any set. He was conducting a campaign of pure personality and ugly personality. And so, you know, I mean, we've had candidates who Republicans have said are, you know, some Republicans say, oh, he's too liberal or he's too conservative. But the party still got behind them. But what he brought was an ugliness. What he's brought is an ugliness that has divided the party in a way that isn't as much around policy even as it is.
It isn't at all. Like I said, it isn't. I agree. What he did is he tapped into the anger that people feel about. I mean, I'll talk to Republicans who say to me, you know, I'm voting for Trump. He's going to really handed to Hillary in the debates. Well, that didn't happen. And he's going to stand up and he's going to fight for all this stuff. And they feel, hey, they elected a Republican president, George W. Bush, the Republican Congress, and they didn't get the changes they wanted. You know, I'll give this to Democrats. They're in it for the long game. Hillary Clinton didn't give up. She didn't say, hey, I tried to run for president. She stuck with it. And so, and Trump, he had people, handlers, telling him what to do, and at times he listened and at times he didn't. You know, I've never seen in all my years of covering politics, people, there's that great moment when this guy walks up to Mike Pence. He's a Trump supporter, and he said, tell Trump he's got to exercise self-control. You know, people who support somebody in politics, they usually blame the media, the handlers, the pollsters, anybody but the candidate. Most Trump voters I know, they all think it's him. And they're okay with that. Or, you know, so it's just, it's.
And they're right. It is him.
It is him. It is him.
And I would just say the easiest thing in the world to maintain is a bad reputation. Because then you can say, well, it's just Trump being Trump. You know, that's the way he always is. He's always like that. But I was listening to an interview with George Packer from The New Yorker. He did a thing on Trump. And he said, you know, when he says make America great again, he means make it white again. You know, all those jobs, all those factory jobs, he's not going to bring those back. Those are gone, you know. And those people are mad, and I understand it. There's a 50-year-old guy who lost his job and has no prospects. And he's saying, I thought this was going to work out for me, and it's not. And he's tapped into that. But it's the basest, lowest common denominator of any political campaign any of us have ever seen. And I think he's going to lose big.
Well, we'll find out. So I don't think Gary Johnson's going to win. I'm just telling you.
Okay. Just in the past 2 weeks, the election has taken kind of two whipsaw changes, both surrounding the FBI making an announcement. FBI Director, is it James Comey, said that they had discovered some new, or not new, but they had discovered some emails on a laptop owned by Anthony Weiner, which none of them wanted to touch.
Who's Anthony Weiner?
The estranged spouse of Clinton aide Huma Abedin.
And what? Why do we know about him?
This is a family show, so
okay.
Let's just say he did stuff you don't do. Anyway, so that threw everything away. I mean, threw everything into kind of a tizzy. And then just this past Sunday, Comey said, never mind. And this is being discussed ad infinitum everywhere, so we don't need to completely dissect it, but I am interested in what do you think? I mean, was Comey doing maybe the controversial but the correct thing that he needed to do? Was it an integrity did he improperly get involved in a poll?
If I were in a life and death situation and I needed someone who had really good judgment, I would not call James Comey. And I don't know if you saw, Mike Huckabee said, you better buy a dog because you don't have any friends in Washington. He managed to alienate the Democrats and then the Republicans later on because he had nothing else. It may have been he was trying to do the right thing and he was scrupulously following what he saw as the rules. But it was a mess from start to finish. The entire thing was a mess.
See, I think he meant well, and that's always, of course, like the words you don't want on your tombstone, right? So I think what happened is that James Comey felt that the FBI should not be insinuating itself into a situation that would determine the election. And the FBI investigation, you know, when he first came out and said, we're not going to charge, I said, yeah, I totally get it. I don't want Hillary Clinton to go to jail. Plea bargain to a misdemeanor, yeah. But really, I mean, it doesn't really help the country. I understand how he doesn't want to do it. And as it turns out, we found out they didn't do a great investigation. They didn't really, there are a million things that they didn't find, like Anthony Weiner's computer, right? And so he comes out and he says, he says, we're not going to charge her. We don't want to get in the middle of it. But he feels that this should have a political solution. So he explains, well, I'm not saying she didn't do anything wrong. I'm just saying that, and I love this, no reasonable prosecutor would go after her. Do you know how few reasonable prosecutors there are in the federal government? They are all gung-ho bananas crazy. They will, when they go after people, there's nothing left standing, right? There are no reasonable prosecutors. And so at any rate, I think this letter where he, now, by the way, polls, like Nate Silver, other people have said that Hillary had started to dip before the Comey letter. A lot of people think it was a Comey letter. I think it was people looked at Hillary. At any rate, and then he comes out Sunday and he says, oh, we're still not going to charge her. I have to agree with Chuck. He's just in trouble. I mean, it's sort of like Greek tragedy. When the most important thing to you is your reputation for probity, you're going to screw up.
Yeah. Daniel, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of discretion. If we had printed a story like that based on that information, we would have been hounded by everybody. How could you print that? Well, I mean, I think at a certain level, the same thing, you know, applied in round one a week and a half ago or a week ago. At least first find out a little bit about what's in there before. The timing, everything about it was just wrong. It was just handled so poorly. It's really disturbing.
So, is the director of the FBI appointed? They're appointed by the president.
Yeah,
10 years.
10-year term.
Oh, so it's not like Obama leaves office. He. And can the new president get rid of him, or is she stuck with him like the Fed chair?
You know, my husband was telling me I'm wrong. I thought the president could fire him. Honey? Yeah, it's a 10-year term. So I think he said it's changed since the last one got fired.
Okay.
You can look it up on Google.
That's the last one.
Right? That's what Google's for.
The only thing I would say real quick is, for tons and tons and thousands of email, I am not blown away by the revelations. I mean, people are discussing the campaign. They're talking about Bernie Sanders. Maybe he's a threat. Hillary is acting like a robot. Come on, let's get this. I don't see any bombshell revelation in this.
That's WikiLeaks, though. That's not the FBI.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
WikiLeaks,
yeah.
But the FBI is looking at the emails. The emails that we've seen, I don't see anything terrible about that. It sounds like a campaign to me. A lot of people in a pressure situation, going back and forth, kicking ideas around, that's pretty much what I expected.
And this goes back, though, to the false equivalency. I really do find even the stuff that's come out for the most part with WikiLeaks and the stuff that's in the whole email investigation is, for the most part, I hate to say it, but in the grand scheme of things, it seems to me it's, for the most part, a yawner. That
yawner.
A yawner in terms of the actual in terms of the actual substance.
Like having a private server is a yawner, and telling people that she did it for convenience when it wasn't true, and telling people that she was cooperating with the investigation when she wouldn't speak to the inspector general, and saying that she handed over all of her business emails to the State Department when it didn't happen.
Yeah,
that's all a yawner. Thank you. Okay.
No, I'd say what's come out of revealing those emails has been less than revelatory. I am not.
Are you talking about WikiLeaks? Or are you talking about
any
the
of the
server?
Emails that have come out?
I'm not talking about WikiLeaks.
You're talking about behavior.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the private server in the FBI investigation.
From Wiener? Yeah. So am I. Yeah.
No. You were talking about the. Okay. Yeah.
What?
If there's something to blow us away, let's see it. But yeah. So far, nothing.
Well, and I think what Deborah was saying is her actions, during and after the survey, that...
Yes.
Were stupid and terrible.
They were stupid and they were poorly,
And she got defensive, which was bad.
She lied.
Yeah, not her best.
It's not her best moments. There's no doubt about it. But the actual substance of what's...
You know what's really, really the worst thing about it is it was avoidable.
It was.
She was a Watergate committee lawyer. She understands that those documents belong to the public. They did not belong to her to do with what she pleased. Rosemary Woods deleted 18 minutes of tape. And she just decided, hey, I don't have to get rid of some of the emails. I'll get rid of all of them.
I'm trying to remember when Rosemary Woods went to jail. When was that exactly that happened?
I don't think she did. But I don't want Hillary to go to jail either. I've said that.
I'm just saying that all these emails, what I hear from the people in the emails are that they are as concerned as anyone about her inability to admit a mistake.
Those are the WikiLeaks. They're not the emails that we're talking about.
Emails from her campaign.
They're John Podesta. They're John Podesta. Yeah. They're not.
And in those emails, I see nothing that's inflammatory.
Well, let's move on then. But stay with the FBI. What do you think? Have you seen the stories about basically some FBI agents in the New York office? They're being painted as having been trying to influence the accusations that they're Trump supporters or at least very anti-Hillary Clinton, and so that they have been accused of leaking information against her. Am I butchering that story? If not,
no, I think that's true.
What do you think about it?
And Tim Kaine said it too. He said, this time of year, I don't really answer my phone because as the election gets closer and closer, you get these calls from these people who want to give you exclusive information. This is going to be unbelievable. You won't know. And it's all unconfirmable. And it's all, it's spaghetti at the wall. We hope something sticks. We go through all this stuff. It's the FBI. I mean, I find it hard to believe that they're trying to influence the election. I think it's more likely that Comey thought he was doing the right thing.
I'm not saying Comey was part of that.
But I mean, I think there's
probably some rogue agents in there. In any organization, you've got people working on trying to work both sides of it. Frankly, we see this with local politics too. I get those calls at the local level all the time. You should check this. And these last minute, how many local candidates have had FPPC complaints filed against them?
You know the answer to that. What is the answer? Come on.
Practically every candidate. The bottom line is that everybody's shoveling dirt right now. Everybody's got an agenda.
I think you were going to say dirt, but okay, that's good.
They're
shoveling something.
It's a family show. Okay.
that leads to Bart, doesn't it?
Well, let's talk about some of the state votes and the state candidates and some of the local and regional things as well. And let's start with the Bart bond. That's one of the 8 million ballot measures this fall. This is a $3.5 billion.
$3.5 billion
that it says it needs for vital infrastructure work. It has some significant opposition, including a rejection by the East Bay Times editorial board. So let me go to you first, Dan. What's your problem with this measure?
Well, let's see. They started out by misrepresenting how much it was going to cost. They're not telling the voters on the ballot that their taxes are going to go up. Those things were all okay. You know, we're playing. And by the way, Bart's basically running a political operation at taxpayer expense, right up the line, if you will. Okay, we can live with all that. It's sort of putrid, but we can live with that. The biggest problem that we've had with this thing is you're going to get $3.5 billion in bond money. There is no commensurate budget of how to spend it because this was supposed to go into a package to address a 10-year needs, but they're planning to spend that $3.5 billion over 20 years because they can't float the bonds fast enough or your taxes would go up too much. And they couldn't sell that. But the most important thing is there's no guarantee that you're going to have a net gain of $3.5 billion on capital projects. Because the way they've structured it, they're able to put the $3.5 billion into the towards this these needs, but then back out other money up to $1.2 billion that could go back into their operations side. And when we said to them early on, back in April, hey, this doesn't look very good, and if you want our support, you're going to have to ensure that this that there will be a net $3.5 billion gain, they flat out refused to do it. And that's where we drew the line. So the basic bottom line is that $1.2 billion of that $3.5 billion could indirectly go to subsidize their labor costs. And that's just wrong. And we asked them to please put up a wall there so that that wouldn't happen. And they flat out refused.
Talk about the janitor.
The janitor.
You've all heard the story.
The janitor. Talk about October surprises.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, here's the thing. You know, everybody knows about the $270,000 janitor. You know, I mean, if you haven't heard about, you know, this thing just, one of the groups that watches salaries and total compensation dropped this little thing the week before last. And it was, you know, Bart has a janitor who last year made $270,000 in salary, overtime, and benefits. $270,000.
And okay. If I can interrupt, and he's made $682,000 over the last 3 years.
Thank you for, yeah, there we go. Yeah. Just, you know, I mean, it wasn't a one-off. And Bart's defense of this is, well, sometimes overtime is more efficient than hiring somebody else. Well, when you get to the point that you're paying somebody double time, and this guy was making double time, what that tells you, if it was more cost efficient, is that your salary and benefits then for your average worker are more than, the total is more than twice salary. Something is really wrong at BART if that's the case. But the biggest problem here is, okay, you got these labor things. We've been writing about their labor problems for years, and this is business as usual. This comes back to the original point, though. If they had put a wall up so that we knew that this bond money wasn't going to go to try and fix their labor costs, which, by the way, they already know they have a $500 million shortfall in their operations side over the next 10 years already. And I'll tell you a quick story in a second, but you know, if there was a wall there, we might have gone along with it. Mm-hmm. But if there's no wall there, then there actually is a nexus, and this janitor story actually has some relevancy to Measure RR because there's no wall there between them.
Do you think it's going to pass?
I don't know because, you know, we haven't been. I think it's very likely it could. And the reason it's likely to pass is because BART director Nick Josefowicz, who's independently wealthy, has poured a lot of money into it. He's a very smart guy. He totally understands BART's financial problems, and he's sort of becoming a one man fixing BART his way, if you will. I think if it passes, Nick Josefowicz is probably the person to watch at BART. He will become the de facto general manager, if you will. You know, I mean, because his stature for having gotten this thing passed will be so high You know, and if I may, just, you know, the one little story, you know, coming back to their shortfall, they have a $500 million labor shortfall that they projected after they cut this last labor deal last spring. Mm-hmm. Okay, they after they cut this last labor deal, they announced that it's they're $477 billion short over the next 10 years.
Wait, 477
million. Million over the next 10 years. I'm sorry. Billion, you know, million short over the next 10 years. And when their spokeswoman was asked, well, what about that? Her response, which was a jaw-dropping response, was, well, if the bond measure passes, the problem goes away. And it's like, you see, how is that possible? Well, how is it possible? It's because there is no wall. She hasn't said that since, mind you. You know, but that it was a true moment of candor of what the hidden agenda here is. And it's just wrong.
And if you ride BART, which I do, rode BART in this morning, it's so miserable. Usually when I take it in from the East Bay, there are two stops. There's the police action in Oakland, and then the train is so crowded that there's a medical emergency by the time they get to the Embarcadero, right? So people are feeling, I'll do anything. This is horrible. But, of course, they should have seen how crowded the trains were going to be a long time ago, and they didn't. They didn't manage things well enough, and they didn't run it well enough, and so those of us who ride BART frequently are...
And you know, the counter-argument to that to a certain extent is, yes, they screwed up in the past, but we are where we are, right? Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, that's true. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, we are where we are, but if we're going to have a deal where we're going to raise taxes, let's make sure we're going to get what we're being promised and what we're being asked to pay for. And so the answer to that is, look, you know, our editorial position has been vote the darn thing down, come back in 2 years with a true, pure capital bond, and then let's talk.
I would say two things. First of all, I didn't think we'd be discussing a wall with BART. That was a surprise. That's a Donald Trump kind of a thing. And second, I think the union overplayed their hand. You know, they had this idea. This is old school union politics, and that's how we do it. You know, if you don't give us what we want, we're going to go on strike. And Deborah's experience in BART, and a lot of people's experience in BART, is this is a miserable experience. And you are telling me now that you're going to go on strike, even though you have some of the highest salary. So if something defeats it, I think it'll be that, once again, inner anger at, I don't like the way things are going, and it seems to me we're not making decisions that are making things better. And I'm going to vote against this, even though I know BART probably needs those improvements. And that's a lose-lose, but that may be where it stands.
Well, it will be net gain 2 years from now.
If they come back,
they will. Okay. I mean, look, at after we came out with our scathing editorial on this, one of the BART directors, Joel Keller, came to me and said, well, if this does kill it, I guess we'll have to come back
with a good bond, something sensible.
Yeah. Something sensible. And I'm thinking, we told you ahead of time we were going to say this. We gave you a chance to fix it.
Why don't people listen to newspapers?
Okay, well, let's try to briefly cover some of the other big ballot measures out there. Marijuana legalization, do you think it'll pass?
Yes.
Deborah? Yeah. You both, sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
They both nodded their heads.
Yeah, I think it'll pass. But I will say this. I thought Prop 19 had a good chance of passing when it was on the ballot, and it didn't. But I think this time, Prop 19, by the way, the Chronicle endorsed Prop 64 this year. They did not endorse Prop 19, unlike some people. But anyway, we'll see what happens. I think people are ready for the change, and I think it's going to sweep the nation at some point. It just as prohibition happened incredibly quickly, and nobody foresaw it happening before it did, or very few people did. I think that's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm. I thought one of the interesting stories that the Chronicle had, was our new cannabis correspondent. We have a cannabis correspondent who said that prices might drop by 90%. If it's legalized. I know you're excited. I know. Me too. Great. But I think the concern is that there are a lot of small operators who have been trying to make a go of it, waiting for this to happen. The big companies come in, buy everything up, and it has to be watched and regulated. But
is that the only concern? I mean, isn't the other concern that it doesn't just become the legalization, but the promotion of it? I mean, the Chronicle having their job is to write, I presume, not terribly critical articles about pot.
I think he's gonna take a hard look at it.
Yes, I just out conservatives.
And if I may, as a paper owned by a corporation that happens to be Denver based, we've had one of those for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. A cannabis correspondent or cannabis reporter.
Yeah. It brings new meaning to the Mile High Stadium.
You find he's like really late with his deadlines and kind of. Oh man, I'll get to that. Okay. You want something like every day or what? What is the deal?
Here, you want some of the cookies?
Come on, yeah.
Okay, we have measures in East Bay and in San Francisco about taxing soda. Do you think it'll pass? Do you think it'll do what its proponents claim it would do if it does pass? Deborah?
It'll raise money. I think it'll pass.
Okay. You don't think though their claim is that it'll cut soda use and obesity.
You know, it'll have an effect, but I'm sure it'll have an effect.
I think it'll have some effect. Exactly how much is not clear.
Yeah.
You know, the great issue here in the great debate here was, are you raising the price of soda or are you raising the price of groceries? And the reason we do it this way is because the legislature won't let the cities directly tax soda, so they have to go through these hoops, and this is another one of these measures that comes about because Sacramento won't deal with it. But it'll have some effect, and the answer to the question is, based on at least one study, is it looks like about 2/3 of the price of the tax gets passed on in the price of the sodas, as opposed, you know, that's, yeah, and a little bit of it probably does bump up some grocery prices elsewhere. And some of it the grocers eat, I guess.
And I'm gonna go out on a limb here that I don't know what I'm talking about, but this was proposed before.
Right.
But it was proposed with it needed two-thirds to pass. And that was much more restrictive, I think, about what the tax money could be used for. So to attack it now and say it's only going into the general fund is a little disingenuous. And I think you've got to decide, do you want to be on the side of big soda or do you want to be on the, I mean, if it has any effect, that would be great. But if it does something, that would be good.
That's right.
I just feel like you have to vote for it.
I suspect the soda companies, especially the so-called big soda, will discount, and that price increase may or may not ever show up.
Yep. It may be,
call me a cynic, but I mean, their business is at stake, and you know, 20 cents on something that already costs you $1.89, they'll find a way around that.
Right. So, I think that's probably true. So
I'm Mr. Pessimism today, or optimism if you work for Big Soda. So our next topic, now back in the 1980s, when Democrats kept losing presidential elections, they got very good at it. After each election, the New Republic magazine would gather together a bunch of Democratic thinkers and commentators, and they'd all basically go into everything that's wrong with the party and why we lost, and usually, you know, the circular firing squad thing. They called it their quadrennial recriminations issue. After tomorrow, and I saw the votes that you folks did out in the foyer, whatever that room is, on who you thought would win. I think pretty much most people are expecting Hillary Clinton will win. So on that assumption, what do you think the recriminations are going to be in the Republican Party? And what are the four? And you already said it's not Trump's party. And do you think he's going to stick around to be involved in it? Or what do you think is going to happen to this party? Because there are really a number of wings there that are going to have to really fight it out.
So after 2012, the RNC did this postmortem, and they decided that the real important thing that they had to do was tell people that to change their stand on immigration, because if you are against illegal immigration or you feel that the law should be enforced, that makes you look like a racist, and the Republican Party can't do that. I think that a large part of Trump's appeal is for people who just feel that they want to see limits on immigration. I know that, I mean, do I think the Republican Party will make the same mistake again? Yes, I do. I think they're going to deliberate. They're going to point their fingers at voters, not wonder if perhaps they could have had a more nuanced position. Like, let's support the DREAM Act. And then see what happens there. DREAM Act is for people who come into the country when they're underage. Let's do something positive like that. Instead, they're going to lecture people, and they're probably just going to make them angry again.
And they'll be able to win their local elections. I mean, I think that'll be the deal. Is it'll be concentrated. They're fractured now. They have been for a while. It's going to be hard for them to figure out what it is that they believe, other than, I mean, you have to say more than no. They've said no to everything. You have to say more than that if you're going to govern. You have to have a proposal. And it can't be repeal Obamacare. I mean, it's got to be something that's...
Repeal
we want
and
big
replace.
Ideas. Well, that's not going to happen. But I'm just... You need big ideas. I don't hear any. Any idea that is shot down, I think that's their concern and problem. And yet... It works locally, so they still get elected.
And the real challenge they have is, and just to an extent, the Democrats have the same thing, is that they're an amalgam of essentially two parties. They're basically an amalgam of essentially two parties, if you will. You know, I mean, there's the old traditional Republicans, and then there's, and in the past, we also had the, it's interesting, the social conservatism fissure hasn't been the big one this time,
right?
You know, it's been, it's the angry white male, if you will, the fissure. So it's not exactly obvious where they go, but there again, the Democrats have a parallel problem in a certain sense. If you think about it, I mean, they have the Bernie Sanders faction and the Clinton faction. They're sort of, they have the same sort of division in a somewhat different way. But it's just that it got extreme and ugly this year.
So talking about kind of that angry white male, the more populist wing of the Republican Party, I think a lot this year, especially this fall, a number of folks who had never heard of the alt-right before have started to learn more a bit about them. First, maybe define it, if you will, but are they... going to be a continuing player in the Republican Party, or do you think they were kind of brought in because there was the opportunity there through this candidate, and they will either go back to other candidates or not participating after a Trump loss?
Well, the Tea Party is sort of the precursor to Trump, and again, I mean, there are a lot of people who think that the federal government is way too big. And they don't understand why the government doesn't get smaller when they elect Republicans. And those folks aren't going away.
But when we're talking about the alt-right, I guess I'm also kind of pointing toward the white genocide people. They're really ugly parts. What I'm saying is, those people were the core. I mean, I'm saying
John,
they were brought in.
My paper covers Republicans obsessively, and there aren't any. I mean, this is a one-party state, and all people around here can do is talk about those awful Republicans. Don't ever look in the mirror, whatever you do, because this one-party state is so fantastic.
I'm not saying the alt-right is a threat in San Francisco.
I'm also not saying that they are defining
the Republican Party. I'm actually saying, do you think, maybe that is your answer, too. You don't think they're a significant part of the Trump movement. I'm obviously, there are so many different ways of defining it, because even he has brought together some different.
Here's the question.
Groups.
The question is, so there's, let's say Trump has a 1 in 3 chance of winning, right? And if that's true, it will be because there are a lot of people who didn't bother voting for a long time, and he brought them out. I mean, I have no idea how true this is. I know that you'll read in stories people saying, I've never voted in my life, or I haven't voted in decades, and I'm going to go out and vote now. And my guess is and those people exist whether Trump wins or not. But do you think somebody who makes it to the age of 60 and votes for the first time is going to be back? I don't think so. Yeah.
Well, I would say two things. Good luck with that. And the alt-right, those people are horrible. They're not. This is not civil discourse. These are horrible, horrible people who wouldn't exist if it weren't for social media, if it weren't for the opportunity to troll. They are unbelievably vociferous, but they are a small racist segment of the United States. And if we didn't have Twitter, and if we didn't have social media, I don't think anyone would be paying attention to them. But that's an ugly, ugly part of this campaign. Let's don't pretend this is part of the Republican base or party or movement. This is a terrible group of people.
I think there's another Dan? There's another underlying question here, and that is where's Donald Trump going? What happens to Donald Trump, assuming he loses? And
bankruptcy court.
Bankruptcy court, that too. But I think that he ends up. I think he is the Sarah Palin of 2016, except with more. He has the potential to have more staying power than she did. I don't think he's going away quietly. I think that he will be here in one form or another for quite some time.
He's got more money. I would just say the Democrats don't get off the hook on this. And not to help Deborah's side of the argument, but Democrats rolled over for Hillary Clinton. And everybody thought she was a juggernaut. She's going to win this thing no matter what. Nobody wanted to get in front of that. And crazy Bernie Sanders did and turned out to be a lot more viable than anyone thought he was. And I blame the Democratic Party for nominating someone who is old school, who is, we just had a president who based his campaign on hope, and this is a campaign based on, we did it before, we can do it again. We needed more civil discourse, and I'm concerned that people don't want to run for political office at this level because it gets this ugly. But the Democratic Party should have come up with another candidate to at least have challenged her, if not to have represented the Democratic Party.
And I think there's...
Is this pity applause because I'm retiring? Because if it is...
I think you're just working it on the applause line.
It's a little bit. Yeah.
Dan?
I think, you know, the thing that... Hillary Clinton was lucky. She was lucky. And first she had the field sort of... She thought cleared for her. And then she found out that she didn't after all. But the other part of it was that had this been Mitt Romney this year... This is a wholly different. This is a completely different race. This is a completely different race, if she can't,
almost any Republican could have beaten her.
Yeah.
Certainly Marco Rubio, yeah. John Kasich.
I don't know about Rubio, but you know Kasich. You know Kasich, yeah, but suffice to say, the Republicans. Hillary Clinton was really lucky that she drew Donald Trump because she could spend the whole time attacking Donald Trump. And compared to him, she looked really good. She looks really good compared to him, you know, in terms of if you line up the two candidates. But had it been somebody a little more sane... It would have been a whole different outcome.
Okay. As we mentioned, Chuck is leaving the San Francisco Chronicle in about 3 weeks.
And yet, I have the opposite reaction. Thank you.
I just wanted to take a few minutes here to both acknowledge what you've done and to wish you well. But I have some questions. So, true or false, you golfed with Mayor Ed Lee in the mayor's office?
I did golf in the mayor's office. There's a long hallway, and he has a putter. He has two putters, one for his guest, but he doesn't let you use his putter. He's got the special putter, and it's probably 45 feet, and you get to putt two balls, and my second one was headed right for the hole when it was. Unfortunately, deflected by a member of the staff, and I ended up losing. So I don't know how that happened, but I've played golf with Ed Lee. He's actually, as am I, a very enthusiastic but not very good golfer.
Okay. True or false, you've met Donald Trump.
I have met Donald Trump on the golf course again, as a matter of fact. And when we were saying earlier, he was charming. He was playing the AT&T golf tournament, and I was covering the tournament as a sporting event. I was writing columns, and they announced that Donald Trump had just shot a hole-in-one on the course. So I ran out there, and I thought, I'm not sure, you know, how excited he's going to be to see a member of the media. He's still trying to play in the tournament. He was delighted to see me. He could not have been more happy to see me. Put his arm around me, and he took me down the middle of the fairway, which we're not supposed to do. You know, the media is supposed to stay over by the ropes, and he's taking me down the fairway, and he's talking to me, and the marshal came out and said, excuse me, you're going to have to put him. He said, oh, no, this is the San Francisco Chronicle here, so he's fine. And I'm like, yeah, I'm the San Francisco Chronicle, absolutely. And he sent me a letter afterwards, and Marla Maples was there, and he sent me a letter and said, I said to my caddy, you seem like a great guy, and it seems like you were, and now, unfortunately, when we moved, I threw the letter away. It would be worth a lot of money on eBay, I suppose.
Okay. True or false, you once wrote a book about parenting that drew inspiration from kung fu movies.
It's true. It's true. Crouching Father, Hidden Toddler. It's still in print. If you'd like to get it on eBay, Amazon, it's still in print. Every year I get a check for about $67. So that's paid off. That's been good.
Okay, well, my last question. We know what the C stands for. It's Charles. What is the W?
Wilbert. No, it stands for William. And I made it think of that for quite a while, but it's sort of... So the real question is, why are you quitting? And I've been saying, I thought it was a midlife crisis, and then I realized I'd have to live to 112. So, but people have been so nice, and the response has been so great, that I realized I should have quit a long time ago.
And is there another book in you? Whether it's
I about... have a book proposal. If any of you are publishers, I have a book proposal ready to go. Yes, I've got some irons in the fire, as we say.
Very good. Well, thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you, John.
We've enjoyed having you. Thank you. Let's just try to get in a few more of these questions from the audience before we do get to the news quiz. Someone asks, and I don't know if we'll know the answer to this, but I love the question because there's been so much talk about it. What is legal and illegal for poll watchers to do tomorrow, just in case you're planning on watching polls?
Have signs? I'm not supposed to answer that. You're asking.
What?
No,
I'm sorry. This is for you folks.
These are us? Because usually from you ask the audience.
They'll get the chocolate question later.
This isn't the quiz yet.
Yeah.
This is
before we get
still
to the
round table.
They can't campaign.
They can't campaign?
They can't have any signs or whatever.
And I know we can't be within...
Reporters can't?
100,
I didn't know that.
100 feet. Reporters, I've been sent out to do election stories and have been stopped by pollsters who said, you can't ask these questions.
A couple questions that I'm going to try to merge into one, but they both revolve around your candidate, Gary Johnson, and that is, why didn't the media demand that Gary Johnson be included in the debates? And maybe I'm going to tag on to that, kind of the perennial question. Do you think there's a third party that could gain strength after the mess of this year?
Okay, it wasn't the media's job to get Gary Johnson into the debates. It was his. And he thought, I interviewed him this summer, and he thought he had a real shot at it because he needed to be in the top. He had to get 15% in three national polls, and he was moving that way. I think the thing that really hurt him was when he was asked about Aleppo. And, you know, the deal is, like, I like the guy. I think he's a really decent human being. I agree with him on a number of issues. And I think that he really, when he heard that question, he thought, if the person had said, what will you do about Syria, he would have given a different answer. He says he thought it was Aleppo, and that sort of put him off.
There's an Aleppo.
Yeah, I know. It's someone who's hitting the age where I'm going, what? I buy that. But, you know, that he just wasn't a solid enough candidate. And so what happens in elections is that a lot of people look at the third-party candidate, and then as things get tighter and you really hate the other guy more, you start saying, hey, I can't waste my vote on the third party candidate. And so you go home. And that's apparently what happened to Gary Johnson. And I think if he'd done more homework, and by the way, I asked him, what are the three regulations you'd get rid of? And he couldn't answer. And as we're talking, he mentioned a bunch of things he would get rid of. He doesn't respond to that kind of question. People have different brains. That was his. And that's not a good thing when you're a candidate. You have to have answers like that. And so that was a failing for him. So it wasn't the media's job to do what it was his. And he just didn't make it. I do think you could see that with the Bernie bros, that there are people who want to see changes in their party. We'll see. But,
I do think, by the way, Dan? That if Trump had not won the nomination, we would have seen a third-party candidacy in the general election. And it's not about a philosophical third party. It's about somebody who wants to play and can afford to do it. And he had the means, if he wanted to wreak havoc in the general. He did anyhow. But had he lost the primary, he had the ability still to wreak havoc. And that's as likely a scenario, I think, in terms of a serious third party contender as a philosophical third-party contender, if you will.
Very good. Well, let's go on to our news quiz before we end for the night. If you have not been here before, I'll quickly explain what we do. I'm going to ask a question of the audience, Deborah. If you think you know the answer, raise your hand. I'll call on you. Shout it out. If you're correct, Fran will deliver some chocolate unto you. So if you do win, please then let others win the remaining ones, just to make it a little more fair. So, the first question, did you see the story about the Australian man who got out of his car to go to the bathroom? Something happened. Did you see the story? Is that anyone, ma'am? That's right. He discovered a prehistoric human settlement nearly 50,000 years old. So keep your eyes open.
You deserve the chocolates for knowing the word hominid right there.
Right. Okay. Gunsmoke, some of you might remember that, currently holds the television record of 635 episodes. What TV series is set to break that with its new... Sir, your hand jumped. The Simpsons. They just got a 4-year renewal. They will break that. Okay. So... why did Donald Trump complain about singer Jay-Z's appearance at a Hillary Clinton rally? Way in back there.
His language,
that is correct. I should point out Jay-Z is also my initials. Okay. Thanks to a Texas law, Shane Kimbrough was able to cast his vote from work. Where does he work? Anyone? Raise your hand. Oh, ma'am. He's on the International Space Station, that's correct. Mark Zuckerberg and other Facebook executives are being investigated for possible prosecution in what country?
China.
Nope. Good guess, though. China. No.
Still wrong.
Anyone? No? Way in back? Nope. Nope. One more try, ma'am?
Okay.
Ma'am? Sorry? Still not China, no. Okay. What?
Korea?
Nope, okay.
India.
It's Germany.
Oh.
And this involves the posting of racist and Holocaust denial stuff on Facebook, which is, of course, illegal in Germany. Donna Rice Hughes, the woman whose affair with presidential candidate Gary Hart helped end his candidacy. She's become an anti-pornography activist and has announced her selection for president. Who is she voting for? That's right, Donald Trump. Okay. How did a man in New York honor his dead friend? Ma'am?
Poured his ashes into the pit at the Metropolitan.
Yeah, all he did was poured his ashes during a performance at the New York Met. They had to stop the performance and evacuate the building, but otherwise, his friend was honored. Yes.
Right here, man in the beard.
Okay, and then... So the Chicago Cubs, as everybody knows...
Over here. This Fran? Woman over here, Fran.
Over here on the front. So the Chicago Cubs finally won the World Series last week after 2,000 years without a win. Now, on the south side of Chicago, meanwhile, U.S. Cellular, a company named U.S. Cellular, is paying $13 million to do what with the crosstown rivals White Sox? No, but you're surprisingly close. Does anyone want to guess? No, they've got a stadium. It's Comiskey Park. It's called U.S. Cellular Field. They want to pay $13 million to...
put in wireless Wi-Fi?
No? One guess, way back there. That's right, they want to take their name off the stadium. Eight, three, four, five, six. Let's see, just a couple more. One day before the first election day that could deliver us a female president, we lost the first female U.S. Attorney General, Janet Reno. That wasn't the question. She passed away at the age of 78 after a protracted battle with what disease? Way in back, ma'am. Parkinson's disease. That is correct. So my final question is, who will win the presidency on Tuesday? Just shout it out. Okay. Well, we'll all find out together. We'll also be back here with more news quiz questions and a lot more to discuss on Monday, December 12th, right here in the great city of San Francisco. Thank you for everyone. Thank you to our panel, Daniel Borenstein, Deborah J. Saunders, Chuck Nevius. Thanks to all of you here in our audience and everyone watching online and listening.
So we're rushing.
Have a great week.
To the airport.